I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Luke's Massive Storytelling Podcast Thing. Whoa, yeah. Here we go. Check it out now. Enjoy.
Hello, welcome to Luke's Massive Storytelling Podcast Thing. My name is Luke and this is my thing. So, how's it all going? How are you guys? What are you up to? What have you been eating? Yeah? Sounds tasty. So, NaNoWriMo is... A lot of people are finishing now. They're getting towards the end. I've done my word count. I'm just doing a quick initial edit, like a first pass, because there's some things I know now and that finish the story... that I need to change it at the start or in the middle to make it all add up. So I'm going to spend the last days of NaNoWriMo doing that, getting it all finished up. Also, a short animated film that I've been working on for the past 2 years is almost finished and will be online for Christmas. It's a film that, a story that I wrote and was animated by a friend back called Emma from the Midlands. And it's called Doghouse, and I think it's actually pretty good. I think it's turned out really well, so I can't wait to share that with you guys. What else? Okay, so today is an interview show. It's a lot longer than the other episodes that I do, but it's cool. I think you're going to enjoy it. The interview is with Justin Sloan. Justin Sloan is an indie author, video game writer, former Marine, and what I like to refer to as a podcast person. And by that, I mean I listened to 3 semi-related podcasts, and he appeared in each one. And now he's going to be in this show, so surely it won't be long before Apple have to update their podcast logo app to a picture of his face. And he's got a nice face too, so you're going to want to update to the latest iOS. He's also the author of the Creative Writing Career series of books, and has published several fantasy novels, which we'll get into. But what's really cool, Justin works for Telltale Games, where he writes for the Game of Thrones games and the Walking Dead games. And I don't know if you've played those games, but the writing in those is phenomenal. They're very much, it's like sort of like a choose-your-own-adventure sort of game. If you're going to try one, I'd recommend... just downloading the first episode of The Walking Dead, because it's really, really cool. Cool, okay, so let's get into it and see and talk to Justin and go from there. All right, cheers. So, welcome, Justin.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I look forward to chatting.
Yeah. So maybe start by telling us a little bit about who you are and what you do and your background and that sort of thing.
Yeah, sure. So I was in the Marines for 5 years, in the United States Marines, and that was a crazy, weird experience. And somehow that has led to, as you mentioned, me now working at Telltale Games. And we've done a couple other games, too. I've been on Tales from the Borderlands and Minecraft Story Mode. Okay. In addition to, like you said, Walking Dead, the miniseries coming out soon, and Game of Thrones, episode 5 and 6 of season 1 is what I was on. Yeah. And I do my own thing on the side, and it all kind of came about through me doing the normal job, you know, doing a normal desk 9 to 5 and realizing how bored I was and how that was not my calling, and deciding that I was going to go 100% in. I was going to just, you know, change everything on my website and LinkedIn and all my web presence and my way of thought and everything to just be 100% writer, nothing else.
How long did the transition take? So how long did it take you to go from that to, you know, working as you are today?
Yeah, well, so I got into writing in 2010-ish. somewhere around there is when I got like really serious about writing and decided to get into a master's program for it and all that. Yeah. But I was still considering it like a, you know, something I'll do while I'm working. So not like a side thing, but kind of like a two things at once kind of deal. Mm. And then around 2012 is when I went into the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco. And that was kind of like what I thought my goal was for a long time, was doing like finance related to Asia. I was doing Taiwan and India with a little bit of Japan and sometimes Korea. And so that's what I was doing at the Federal Reserve. And I started realizing that, wow, this is not at all what I want to do. Like, why was this my goal? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
and I just wanted to be creative, you know, and working on my craft and writing awesome stories. And so the common thing I say on all these podcasts is, you know, every minute I was there doing that was a minute I wasn't improving my craft or becoming a better writer. And that was, you know, really making me feel depressed. So around 2014, sometime around there, I said, I'm going to go hardcore. Around that May 31st of 2014, I said, when it hits May 31st, I'm out. You know, I'm going to walk out the door, whether that means I'm a full-time author at home, not making any money or a little bit, or whether that means I do something that's awesome and we'll see what happens. And so I started, you know, I was applying for about a year, I would say. You know, my long answer to your short question was a year of me just applying for like everything I could find that was related. Yeah. And I was connecting with people on LinkedIn and people at Pixar and other places like that and going to meet for coffee when I could. And a few people that I met, like basically everybody started leaving Pixar and coming over to Telltale Games. And I was like, what is this place that everybody's leaving Pixar from to go to? Because Pixar was kind of like my you know, gold, the light at the end of the tunnel type thing time. And so I checked out Telltale and I thought it was awesome. And, you know, because games, you know, you as a writer, I was 100% writer first. Games were kind of like a thing that I liked, but it wasn't, you know, my main go-to. I was writing more novels than screenplays. And I loved games as a kid. And so I have a lot to build for my job interview. And now I'm, of course, very much into the game world. But I started following where they were looking it up, playing all these games, looking up on YouTube, seeing what I was missing out on in the last couple of years. And then applied and got the job.
Are you happy how it's ended up, like where you are now?
Oh, of course. I love this, man. I'm just like, right now, I'm looking out over the rolling green hills and birds flying in the sky over a lake.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. And it's, you know, it's making cool video games. And people who heard me on other podcasts probably hear me tell this story too. But, it, you know, one of the reasons I started writing was because I'd read the Game of Thrones first four books. I was waiting for the fifth. Maybe it was the third, waiting for the fourth. I don't really remember, but it's somewhere in there.
Yeah.
People could probably just look up what dates, you know, what book came out shortly after 2010. But so I was in that stage and I was like, man, I want to write a book. If I can't get another Game of Thrones book right now, maybe I'll try to write one like it. And of course, that book ended up not being like it, but it was in the fantasy genre.
Hmm.
But the long part of that is that I was like, oh, I'm going to write something like Game of Thrones. And now I got to be actually writing Game of Thrones, the game here at Telltale, which was, you know, so it came kind of full circle. So it was this awesome experience of seeing kind of my dreams realized, you know.
Do you ever have to
win the lottery?
Yeah. Do you ever have to pinch yourself and remind yourself of how lucky you are to be in the and what you're doing today?
I have to remind myself often because this is a common thing that'll always happen in everybody's life. It's like no matter where you get, you always realize that there's more and that you have struggles regardless. So I feel like surviving after you get in the door is almost as hard or harder as getting in the door in the first place.
Yeah.
So there's that. So it's not just like you can ever think, oh, now I've made it and it's done and that's awesome. But you always have to be thinking, okay, how do I make sure that I'm kicking butt here? And if there's something next, how do I make sure that I'm ready for what's next? And on the, you know, the flip side, the counter argument that everybody's probably thinking is, well, yeah, but now you have Game of Thrones on your credits and Walking Dead and you've published whatever 9, 10, 20 books, you know, and the podcast. And so that's true. There's all that stuff now. So in theory, it's going to be so much easier to keep the momentum going and keep the career going. And in that sense, I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. And it's rolling and it's cool. But there's always that fright of, okay, but what if, you know, these guys let me go or something like that. And I'm sitting at home and nothing else comes. And, you know, the books just suddenly stop selling and et cetera, et cetera. So.
Yeah,
it's always there's always that fear. I think no matter what, there's always gonna be that fear.
So you write for video games, you publish fiction, and you also write nonfiction. I'd love to know why Why are you doing nonfiction as well as a fiction and the job and the podcast? Do you know what I mean? Why are you sort of spreading your wings so far and instead of focusing on one? Is it just because you want to do it that way?
Yeah, it's the passion. I definitely would say don't do anything that you don't feel passionate about. And if you feel passionate about something, do it. Regardless of how busy you are, find a way to make it happen. Because if you're that passionate about it, I mean, you will. That's not advice you need, really. But don't like limit yourself just because you feel like, oh, I need to focus on one area or one niche. Some people succeed that way, and that's cool. If you're like, I want to do games, and I'm only going to do games because that's all I want to do, then that's fine, and you might succeed in that route. But one of the things, I was on the Austin Film Festival as a panelist recently, which was an amazing experience. And one of my big kind of lessons that I was trying to impart on people is that it's great to have all these doors that you're knocking on because you don't know which one will open when. So if you're going to focus on being a screenwriter or a video game writer, that door might not open for 10 years. But if you were doing screenwriting, novel writing, and video game writing, you know, one of those doors, like the novels, all of a sudden might start making you like hundreds of thousands of dollars next month.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be able to survive on that while you're still trying to break into the video game industry and getting, you know, the prestige of having these novels that are doing awesomely.
Yeah.
Or if you're writing screenplays, suddenly one of your screenplays might get made into a movie. And because of that, you might land that job in the video game industry, you know, because people care about that. Like video games care about story nowadays. They love story. You know, story is key lately. Yeah. And from
that, they're going to sort of find out who you are and like delve into your back catalog of fiction and stumble down that rabbit hole that is you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And that's why the nonfiction comes in too, is it's kind of always been a passion of mine to share stories, to kind of help other people out and mentor. And so a lot of people were calling me up and or emailing me and asking for advice like I had done. And I thought, well, instead of just doing that, I'm still happy to like respond to emails and all that. But I was like, why don't I put all those thoughts together and thoughts of other smart people smarter than myself who have way more experience and who kind of helped me along the way. Why don't I put all that together in a few books and have that so that instead of having to email me, they can just look at the book, which I give away for free if you sign up for my newsletter. So it's not like why don't I make money off of you people? It's why don't I have that so that everybody can use it and have it as a reference point. So for example, Creative Writing Career, the book, you can go onto the podcast and get it for free when you sign up for the newsletter, which is creativewritingcareer.com. Which is also where we put out info about the podcast. And now we're putting it out in podcast form, which is also free. And we go out there and we interview people like the writers on Shadow of Mordor or Red Dead Redemption or the books Wheel of Time, or sorry, not Wheel of Time, but a guy who started a fan site for the Wheel of Time books.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. Robert Jordan, you know, in spite of him being dead, he's on our podcast every day. he's not.
It seems like a lot of writers I know who were screenwriters, who spent a lot of time screenwriting, have gone on to, you know, publishing, writing novels, or gone on to sort of concentrate on games rather than working in films. Why do you think that is? Why do you think they go into games in particular?
Yeah, I have a lot of people I know who have gone on to write games from screenwriting, like you said. And a big part of that is you'll end up in Hollywood making a lot of money working for 5 or 10 years and never see something hit the screen. Which is, I feel depressing. It's kind of why I've moved on. Like, I do a lot of screenwriting, but I'm definitely more focused on the games and the novels right now, because I've written like 15 screenplays and they just sit in my shelf. And occasionally somebody will ask me for one and I'll send it to them, or you'll see a posting on some website or something, you'll send it in and maybe you'll get a little traction, maybe you'll get optioned, but that's it.
Yeah.
And sometimes people get screenplays made, but the idea that you're working for so long and not seeing anything come, the whole idea is we want to put stories out there. So if it's just somebody buying it and then it sits on a shelf in a movie studio, that's depressing. So that's one reason. Yeah. Also is like, you know, Hollywood's kind of being less creative nowadays, everybody says. Well, as in the game industry, it's kind of like everybody's saying it's the next big thing. On our panel at Austin, a lot of people were saying that the games are kind of like where film was in the 1920s or that era. Like it's only going up from here, you know, it's only getting more and more awesome. And it's just everybody's starting to see, like through Telltale's games or through Life is Strange or games like Beyond Two Souls, they're starting to see that story is what matters in game, a lot of games now, and it can be just as awesome as it was in film, and money too, you know, like a lot of games have made a lot more than movies. I think somebody's saying Assassin's Creed 2 made more than Avatar did when it came out, or
wow,
you know,
yeah.
that might be the wrong game, don't quote me on that, but you know, they're making as much money as Avatar, which blew away box office.
Someone
you know?
Told me that the game industry was 10 times the size of the film industry now. Does that
that's insane sound about
isn't
right?
it is insane.
Sure.
But it also makes me think, why again, like why would you spend 6 months or however long writing a screenplay, 90-page screenplay that doesn't really go anywhere, and you've got less chance of making a bit of money. Why not go into games or something else?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm still, like I said, I'm still doing all of it because I have to. I love it, you know. And there's always that part of you that says, you know, like writing for Pixar would be amazing. So yeah, if you just ignore that completely, then that's a dream that just kind of fades away. But if you keep, you know, doing a script every once in a while, then it's always a dream that could live in your mind and potentially happen, because maybe Pixar discovers you through your novels or through your video game writing or connections you've made along the way in any of those endeavors.
Yeah. Have you read Creativity Inc. by any chance?
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about the brain trust.
Yeah.
Like little meeting. I'm a little bit scared of going in there because they sound so honest. Like they sound like they just rip you to pieces, but maybe in a good way, I guess.
And that's the nice part about games is it's very much like that. Like you'll have similarities, of course, differences, yeah. But it's very much a collaborative environment where you have all these different levels of people giving you feedback and notes and checking it, and much more so than a TV room even. And you have this level of like kind of the executives who get in there and then rip you to shreds and you have to go back and redo it. And so it's not for the faint of heart, I guess. You know, yeah. Novels, you can do whatever you want. If you're doing screenplays, until you get in the studio system, maybe like you get notes, even then you're getting notes, but you can go do with them what you want, and then you might get fired, you might not. But it's a different kind of mindset than I think video games or Pixar where you go in there and you just have to make all these humongous changes, even if that means throwing away the scene completely and starting over from scratch 20 times, which is crazy, but it's how the magic happens.
So when you're self-publishing, you're essentially the project manager. Would you lead like your own game design or something at some point, do you think?
Not I. No. I like the writing.
Yeah.
I like keeping it separate. I've thought about that kind of stuff before. Like, what is it? One of those sites that like Udemy or something had a super great deal on learning Unity recently.
I might have taken this. I think I bought the same one. It was like £9 or something. It was like Unity Masterclass.
Cheap. Yeah. Yeah. I think here is like $20. And so that's awesome. You know, if you want to like make your own game, and I have a buddy who recently did that, and you know, it's a way to get your name out there for people who are thinking about getting into games. Definitely it's a way. But there's also all these companies like, I don't know if you can hear that car alarm going off. Sorry about that.
It's all right.
But there's all these companies that are like Pocket Gems. They often hire writers, like more novice writers, perhaps even for their game episode. And you can get on those kind of games and actually have, you know, finished products out there that people can look at. And I asked this question to somebody recently who was a lot more experienced than I am. I think it was the guy who was a Red Dead Redemption writer. And his thoughts on this were, it's better to get involved in stuff like that, what Pocket Gems is doing, because even though it might not be as cool as your own game that you did, a lot of times these self-made games end up looking really amateur. And so to have your writing on you know, something that might feel silly to you, but is actually like out there making lots of money and getting played by lots of people, like the Pocket Gems game, it kind of has a little more prestige to it.
Yeah. So as well as all this, you're also, as I said, an avid podcaster. So what have we got? We've got the Creative Writing Career Podcast, Self-Publishing Answers Podcast.
Yeah.
What else? Was there something else? Or
Military Veterans in Creative Careers.
Military Veterans in Creative Careers. Okay.
So that's our bread and butter right there. No, it's not, but it's it's like more of the passion project for me.
Yeah.
Because that was a big thing of looking at my time in the military and looking at all the veterans that are out there in Hollywood and in the game industry and writing and whatnot, and how we can help each other. Because it's kind of like you can skip the step of going to film school. You already have this big cadre of people who are willing to help you get ahead, this big network that you just have to, you know, reach out to and say, I was also a veteran. Just kind of like if you met somebody from USC and you say, I also went to USC. And so I'm trying to, you know, help other veterans understand that they can leverage that. And a lot of people get out of the military and kind of feel, I don't know if it's ashamed or embarrassed or whatever, but they kind of ignore it. They just push it aside. Well, I definitely believe they should be using everything they can to their advantage to get ahead. You know, it's not like you're using people, because we're people like me. We're doing the podcast and the book and everything. We're out there saying, hey, here's how you can get ahead. And you also get these people with chips on their shoulder who go out there and they think like, oh, I was in the military, so I can get ahead in life faster, or, you know, skip some steps, which is also not true. And so that's part of our point of that podcast, is to make sure people know what they need to be doing to put themselves on the same level as everybody else, you know, level the playing field. And and get out there and be competitive. And so, all these podcasts, it's kind of the same idea with the creative writing career. We want to, you know, like be sharing the information with everybody so that they know what they need to know. Cause that's a big problem I've always felt in my life, you know, going to like a ghetto high school and not knowing anybody in any industries anywhere is just, you don't know where to start or, you know, where to put your energy. And so we're trying to help you get ahead of that stage and not have to not know what you don't know.
Yeah. I think for someone like me, so I'm from like a small town in England. I remember when I first started screenwriting and I think I found the Script Notes podcast and like devoured it. And at the time, like, because there was nothing there, nothing I knew, I didn't know how to get started, and podcasts just seemed like a really great way to do that.
Yeah, I'm the same with you, and I love that podcast. And actually, I think it was them talking about one way to get into screenwriting is to write for games. Hmm. And I think that was one big factor that made me start considering it in the first place, because I was like, I like games. I write screenplays. Why would I not do that?
Yeah.
And then you talk to all these people who talk about the constant paycheck in games versus Hollywood always struggling for the next project, trying to find what's out there. That's a big selling point when you have a family, which I do.
Yeah. So out of curiosity, what are your favorite podcasts?
Script Notes, for sure. Writing Excuses with Brandon Sanderson, who's one of my favorite authors also. He wrote the Mistborn trilogy, and he wrote these new things he's doing called the Stormlight Archives, and he took over for Robert Jordan when he passed away.
Did he do the last book in the Wheel of Time?
The last three, I think. Yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
In the Wheel of Time books. So he's a pretty big deal, and he's awesome. And got my picture with my baby with him once, so that was kind of cool back when I was first starting out. And anyway, his books are amazing. The podcast is awesome. It's only 15 minutes, so it's great for when you're just like a short commute or you just want to take a walk for a break during work or something.
Yeah, I'll check that out.
Yeah, and they're sponsored by Audible, and we just did that for our Creative Writing Career podcast too. So we're kind of trying to, you know, in some ways emulate them.
Yeah.
But definitely those two, you know, screenwriting, Script Notes, novel writing, Writing Excuses. And I don't know if I have one yet for video game writing. I'm trying to figure that out. But so that's one thing we did with Creative Writing Careers. We were listening to all these cool podcasts, but I'm like, there's got to be other people like me who just want to do it all. Or maybe they don't know where they want to start. You know, maybe they want to do a little bit of novel writing, a little bit of screenwriting, a little bit of video game writing. Yeah. And that's why in Creative Writing Career, we just do it all. You know, we have each of us kind of has a specialty in that, and we bring in different people who've done, you know, script consulting or video game writing or awesome novels like Will White's House of Blades book. And
The Creative Writing Career podcast is like my ideal podcast, I think, because I sort of feel like we're in a post medium world where if you're a storyteller, you can do anything and still have that authorial voice, and you can still tell the story you want to tell, but you can self-publish books. We're going to crowdfund a comic book series next year.
Awesome.
Make sure.
And so many writers are doing that, right? Like so many of them are all over the place. We just interviewed Alan Warner, who wrote the foreword on my second Creative Writing Career book and was interviewed in the first. And he's doing so many cool things with games and comics and film. And there's so many people you meet who are doing all these. And there's, like you said, all these game companies that are hiring filmmakers and all these novelists who are getting into making some of their books into comics, graphic novels, or screenwriters who are doing that, hoping it'll lead to becoming a movie. And Creative Writing Career, it's definitely been taken off, so it's awesome. There's other people out there like you who are in the same boat, who are thinking that that's like the ideal way to go, and so I'm really happy about that. Thanks.
Yeah. I'm gonna link to everything in the show notes as well, so there'll be
awesome
people can just click on that. So you've got like the ideal day job, right? So you work for Telltale Games. What does your actual workday look like?
Let's see. It looks like me just having a lot of fun. Yeah, it's just like writing a screenplay or a novel in a way, except for that you're doing it with a lot of other people. So it's not like a writer's room in the sense that you'd go in and like work it with a whole group of writers every day. A lot of times I just go in, I open whatever I'm working on, whether it's doing some character bios and getting that stuff ready for a screen for the game, or just opening up some scenes and straight up writing, you know, like
sounds,
the way we do
it
games.
It sounds insane. Like when I think
as
about
a job,
like,
as a job, you mean?
Like my job, it sounds similar, like going to work, going to the office and stuff, but we don't write screenplays and stuff.
What do you do?
Oh, I'm an IT technician in the day.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I used to do that in the Marines. I was an IT guy.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, the finance stuff and some government stuff. And it is the same. And you're dealing with a lot of the same issues as far as like productivity and keeping track of your tasks and knowing what you need to be doing, except for in the game world, you have producers and executive producers and leads on season leads and episode leads on writing and design. And so you just have all these levels of people who have their fingers in the pot.
Yeah.
And that's kind of crazy. That's the big difference. But on the actual day-to-day work of it, it's really just about going in there and, you know, figuring out what's the scene going to be and where the character arcs are and all the normal stuff you do with writing.
Do you have like deadlines then? So do you like,
oh yeah.
So on Friday, you've got to have this bio done and these words done, or.
Yeah. And if you, any game industry, any game company, you're going to hear about crazy, production schedules. And that's for sure always true, I think. The rumors you hear are true. It's just like you're constantly busting out massive amounts of writing. And that's why I love the guys on the self-publishing podcast. I don't know if I mentioned them when you asked my favorite podcast.
No, those that's guys, another good one as well, yeah.
Yeah, Sean and Johnny and Dave, yeah. They just bust out words. And it's very similar to like what we're doing. You know, you just have to approach it. Well, of course, here it is a day job, but when you're looking at like the self-publishing world, I think it's also smart how they do. You just approach it like it's a full-time job, and you just write. Like,
yeah,
they do. They're crazy. They do like 17-hour days of writing sometimes, or at least 10 hours. And I think if I was just a stay-at-home writer, I would probably do my 4 hours, maybe another hour or two in the evening of, you know, editing or something. But you know, that's good that they're doing it that way.
Yeah,
and that's what it's like here.
So I finished my first novel in like a trilogy I'm writing, and I emailed Sean. Sweet. And said, what would you do if you were in my position? And he said, don't release it, write 2 to 6 more books,
yeah.
And then think about releasing it, and then you like release them close together.
Awesome. So, did you hear our SPA podcast about that? We had a self-publishing answers podcast where it was the title, I think, was Writing Your First Book. Or what should I be doing when I'm writing my first book?
Yeah, yeah. I'm still like, because there's like 44 episodes of that. I listened to like the latest 4 or 5, and now I've gone back to the start, and I'm working my way through, because it's quite a lot of that.
This one's somewhere in there. I think it's episode 40, perhaps. Yeah. It's somewhere in the last. I only started on with those guys at episode 37, I think.
Yeah.
And so it's somewhere in between 37 and 46 is that one. But anyway, it's a good one because we talk about that, like what you should be thinking about as far as like the author newsletter and marketing and writing the next books. And I agree with him. I think it's okay to maybe write 3 or 4 and then start going hardcore.
Yeah.
You know, it's all preference. It's all like making sure you know that your novel is good, I think is the key there.
Yeah.
And of course having a library so that you can, you know, people can discover they like your book and then they can buy more. But a big part of it is definitely write that first one and then write a couple more so you can see what you learned from that first one and the next one and the one after that.
Yeah, I've just done NaNoWriMo. I've just about finished the second one, and now I know where I can go back and fix some things in the first one. So it has been good, I think. Yeah.
But you're doing comics and other things too.
Yeah, there's always stuff to do. Just like you. there's always something that when I'm writing, working on one thing, I'm always thinking, I can't wait to get onto the next thing, weirdly. Yeah.
Nice. And I think it's key is if you're writing in these multimedia, you know, like we are, you can learn so much from writing a screenplay or writing graphic novels or whatnot that you're kind of skipping ahead of some steps. Like if you only write novels, it's going to limit you. But when you start writing screenplays, you start thinking more cinematically and, you know, more condensed and all that. And so it's going to definitely help you kind of skip steps if you were just doing one.
Yeah. So the next question I've got on my list was actually, you've been publishing, when was the first book you published? Because I've got here November 2014, but I don't think that's right, is it?
No, that sounds right.
Okay, so what are the biggest lessons that you can bestow? What are the biggest mistakes that you've made since that first year?
On publishing?
Yeah.
Huh, I don't know. My first, so I published probably nonfiction. What I did though is I wrote my first book back in 2010 and kind of busted it out. And then I took a long time thinking I'd probably go the traditional route. And now I'm going one book traditional and a lot of books self-published because you have so much freedom with self-publishing and it's awesome. So I'd say kind of that's one lesson is that you don't have to wait, but I would, you know, put an asterisk on that and say it's good to wait because like we were talking about, you want to have a lot of books done and you want to make sure that the first one doesn't suck. So by the time you've written your third or fourth one, you might realize all these things that you could have done on book one to make it better. And that's what I did. I went back and I rewrote book one like crazy. And that's Falls of Redemption, which is out there now as 6 parts. And then also one book published with all 6 together. It's like 600 pages there because each one was 100 by itself.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Sean and Johnny and Dave model when they were doing episodes. And So there's that lesson of like, you don't have to wait so long, but it's okay to wait a little while to make sure that you have it where you want it to be. I wouldn't rush anything. And, you know, one lesson, of course, is editors, when you're working freelance, even with traditional publishers, probably too, of course, they don't always catch it all. I've definitely published things after even going with like two different editors on one book and then had somebody email me and say, oh, look at all these typos. And I'm just like pounding my forehead into my fist, you know, going, oh, how can that be out there with all these typos after I paid people to edit it?
Yeah.
That sucks.
I noticed a typo in Creativity Inc., like the Pixar book. So it happens. I mean,
it happens and it sucks. But so the key there is, of course, for, you know, the lesson for people is don't think you can do it by yourself and don't rely on other people. What I like to do now is I do it myself where I read it on my phone. So it's a different, you know, way to look at it.
Yeah.
And I have like one of those humongous iPhones, iPhone 6S Plus. And I had a Note 3 before, which is like the same size.
Yeah.
So it's great to do that. And they have all these apps that you can actually edit as you go or just highlight as you go. And then I go back and do my own version that way. And then I send it to the couple editors. And then I go back through and read it one more time on my own, whether it's on my phone or computer or whatever. I know Sean at one point talked about doing it where he reads it out loud to himself, which is awesome. But that just, it hurts me to do that. So I don't.
Yeah.
But you just got to, you know, push through and either pay people a lot of money or put a lot of energy into editing, because otherwise you'll embarrass yourself.
I think it's that method of just changing the medium in which you're reading it. Like, if you're reading on the same word processor and over, I think you sort of become blind to it a little bit.
Yeah, I heard a key thing that sounded kind of cool recently, a piece of advice that was change your font. So lady was saying, I think it was on Writing Excuses. She was saying she writes in Times New Roman and then reads it in Courier New or something like that. And so that's kind of cool. You know, I've never thought of doing it that way, but it'll look totally different. And the page, and the words will be in different spaces and everything like that. So it's worth a try. I might do that next.
Yeah. Something I've been doing as well is highlighting like a paragraph and then doing the text to speech and then getting my computer to read it back to me. And then you can sometimes hear like weird sentences and stuff.
Yeah, it's going to take forever, but it's awesome. I think there's all these really smart things to do, and it's just you got to, you know, weigh your time. Like, I've also dealt with people who go back and revise their novel like crazy and just never write the next thing. And that's, of course, you know, it's good in its own way, but it's also smart to be writing that the next one. And there's time, like deadlines that you give yourself. I've been doing these books that I started a long time ago and they became something totally different, which are the Ali Strom books, Ali Strom and the Ring of Solomon. I like those covers a lot.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're really, really good. You didn't do the covers yourself, I'm guessing.
So for Falls of Redemption, I did my own cover at first, and then that was years ago. And then I realized how amateur looking that was, even though I've always been kind of an artist. It's just, if you don't understand like book design, you shouldn't be playing with it. You should let somebody else do it. And then what I like my teddy bear books, I always end up drawing a version of it because no artist has been able to get it how I wanted it. And they always end up doing the background and I do the teddy bear, and then they do a recoloring over the teddy bear to make sure it fits with the background.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
A weird thing. But what I was going to say is with the Ali Strom books, I put book 3 out there already for pre-order on Apple Books only, because there's this, they like to kind of highlight books that are, book 3 is only on Apple. The other two are available elsewhere. And then book 3 will also be available elsewhere, of course, after a month or two later. But then that's a hard thing to do, is setting pre-order dates and when you're on books you're not done with. So right now I'm like scrambling to get that one done, because I got to make sure it's out there on the pre-order date.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of an interesting experience. But book covers, 99 Designs, that's what I used for that.
It's obviously worked really well, because the covers are amazing.
Thanks. I was lucky, because you know what? Only two people submitted to that one. And the first one who submitted was that cover artist, and the second one was somebody who also did a pretty good job, but I wasn't as keen on.
Only two people submitted that.
Yeah, and which is funny, because you know 99 Designs, their whole thing is like, you know, you get all these submissions, then you pick the top 6, and then you go from there to pick your favorite one. But that's what happened for some reason. You know what it is, though. I could probably tell you why, but before I do, I would say that I emailed them about it and asked, and they said, if you want, we can refund your money or start a new one and promote it more on our end to make sure that it gets a lot of submissions.
Yeah.
But I ended up liking that one so much that I said, no, let's go with this.
Yeah, it's cool. Fine. Yeah.
but why that probably happened for people who are considering 99 Designs, I went with it twice before and didn't like any of the submissions. And so I pulled out and got all my money back.
You know, they might not, Can the artist see that though? Can they see that? Oh, I see.
So I actually had another artist email me this time and say, hey, I'm thinking about submitting, but I want to ask you these questions. And they asked me, like, I see that you have done this before and did not award anybody, you know, the winning spot. And so that made me realize, oh, this is why I'm not getting submissions. Everybody sees that and they think, why bother? Because he might not award it anyway, or he might be taking our ideas and going to do something else with them or whatnot, you know. So that's something to think about if you do 99 Designs. If you do pull out, it's going to be tough when you retry. Yeah. But in my case, it worked out. I like this one. And actually, a funny story on when I pulled out the second time, I was later looking at books. I was talking with other authors, and I saw a cover I liked a lot. And I said, oh, that's cool. Who's the artist? And they sent me a link to their site. And I went to their site, and I saw a cover that looks really cool. I said, oh, that's really interesting. What's this? And I scrolled down, and at the bottom was the title of my book. And I said, wait a second. What? And then I emailed them about it, and they said, oh, I submitted for your 99 Designs thing back in whatever that was, like 6 months ago. And this was what I submitted. And I was like, how did I miss that? And so I went back through with them on 99 Designs and hired them directly, which you can do through their site.
Yeah.
And rehired that person to complete the Falls of Redemption cover. So that was kind of a funny,
that's cool.
Funny story.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sounds like you're going wide with your publishing. You're not doing KDP or anything like that.
Yeah, I did KDP at first. Yeah. I always do it first for the, well, I'm actually not on Ali Strom books. I'm not doing it first, but I almost always do it for 90 days first, and especially with nonfiction. And I liked it, you know, but what was it? Military Veterans and Creative Careers, the book. Yeah. I put out there on Apple, and it's gotten way more purchases on Apple than it did on Amazon, even when it was exclusive to Amazon. And so, you know, I think different books do better on different platforms. I mean, especially like nonfiction does better on iBooks. I've heard a lot. And now I have the Ali Strom books on iBooks and everywhere else, because I wanted to see if that works as well for, you know, cause they in theory will, like, what do they call it when they promote it or like put it on the top of one of their pages because you're going exclusive with them or something like that. Anyway. So I'm trying these different avenues now, and we'll see if they make a difference, but I feel like exclusivity, it's awesome. There's some things awesome that Amazon does. I don't like doing the 99 cent promos or the free promos too often, because it just starts to feel cheap after a while.
Yeah.
And so I'm not big on that. But what I do like is Amazon lets you advertise directly through their Kindles and whatnot if you are exclusive, and they won't let you if you're not.
And is that something you have to turn on? Or does it just...
So when you publish through Amazon, the first time you click a book on their KDP platform,
yeah.
There's a little button that you can click or unclick that says be exclusive to Amazon, be in the KDP Select program, Kindle's Unlimited,
so
whatever.
If you're in that, does that mean you're automatically promoted on the Kindle themselves? Or
No. So then what you have to do is if you go on the KDP Select platform, there's a place where you can pay for advertising. And you pay per click, kind of like Facebook advertising with Mark Dawson thing he does.
Yeah.
And on here, you can specify whether you want to target a certain book or a series of books. So you can like go in there and pick just Percy Jackson book one.
That
and
sounds
say
kind
anytime
of amazing.
That pops up on a screen. Yeah, it's pretty cool. But if you bid directly on books, I've found it's a lot harder to get purchases than if you bid on a category now. It didn't used to be the case, but now they've opened up advertising to the black and white Kindles. And now because of that, the categories works amazing. So I can, but only for nonfiction for me. For fiction, it just hasn't worked as well.
Yeah.
Because there's not as many categories you can pick. It's like a very narrow subject of categories. And so that kind of sucks. But you can, for nonfiction, it's much more broad. And I can go down into like screenwriting for movies and say, for anybody who likes screenwriting for movies, show Creative Writing Career Book 2 on their Kindle. And I did that for Back by Sunrise for a little while, and it was cool because I had a few people like take pictures of their Kindle and put it on Facebook and be like, I met this guy. I went to school with this guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of a fun experience.
That's cool.
But it wasn't, I think on that one, on my fiction books that I've tried with Amazon advertising, they've made about as much as I spent on advertising, which still is cool because they did better in the rankings because of that.
Yeah.
But it's not, it doesn't seem like it's worth it in the long run to just keep, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it is. Maybe I should have done it, but. Nonfiction, it seemed to work. It seems to always pay off a little bit better. And it depends on your price point is too. If your book is only 99 cents and you're paying like 30 cents per click, then obviously that's not going to work out because not everybody who clicks purchase it.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I've just done Mark Dawson's free, you know, he does like the paid one and he does like the free one. I've just done a free one, but I don't really have the back catalog yet. I don't think to do it properly. So that's,
and, And here's the thing with Facebook ads too, is it's a learning process.
Yeah.
And it costs money to learn. Like, even if you take his course, I think you still have to count on a bit of luck or a bit of just getting it right the first time. So I've done some of that stuff, and it's been okay. It helped me build a little bit of a mailing list, but not an amazing mailing list.
Yeah.
And it helped me get some sales, but not amazing sales. And it was kind of the same idea where, like, the money I was spending was getting me about back what I was, you know, what I was spending.
Yeah.
And so it was like, is it worth all the energy and time that you're putting into that? And that's what that, I guess that's the key, is like, is it worth the time that you're putting in? Cause that same time could be going towards writing the next two books in your trilogy, you know?
Yeah.
Instead, you're like playing with all these ads and trying to get it just right. And it's helping you just a little bit. But I know guys, like Nick on the Self Publishing Answers podcast, who's done really well with those. So when I say that, you know, it's only because I haven't succeeded at that yet. And I probably will eventually.
Yeah.
But the point being, if you don't have a catalog and all that, and if you don't have a lot of books, you might want to spend more time writing books first and then play around with that stuff later.
Yeah, I think I did put an ad on just like £1 a day or something. And it is building a little bit of a mailing list.
That's cool.
But there's no point in wasting time on it just yet. Not while I've got to actually make the things to sell.
Yeah, there's all these things that go into that too. Like, I'm writing the Ali Strom and books like that, which are kind of targeted for like 13 or 14 year olds.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the people who click on the, like, you're going to do a lot better if you're writing, you know, like the mainstream thriller stories that are for people. A lot of people who read books are like 35 to 55 or something like that, 45, I don't know. But you know, they're like in that age range. So if you're going for books that are 13, maybe I should be targeting the parents, but then it's like, you might be targeting, what you can do with that is cool, is like, if my book is kind of like Percy Jackson, I could say only people who like Percy Jackson, it's a female protagonist. So I could say only women, and only women from age 35 to 55. And so if there's a woman who's 35 to 55 who likes Percy Jackson, then it'll show up just for that person. And that'd be a pretty good target audience. And that might be the parent of a kid who likes Percy Jackson, so they clicked it, or it might be the person who likes it.
Yeah.
So that might be smart to do. But the last time I did it for the age range that I thought was appropriate for the readership, which got me a lot of likes and a lot of clicks, but not a lot of purchases.
Yeah.
And so, and I think that was my weakness in that ad set.
Yeah. Also, if your book doesn't, like, I can see how Mark Dawson's works so well, because his books have got that thriller sort of genre, like the lead child sort of thing.
Yeah.
So the people who like those books are monstrous readers. Like,
exactly.
They just read so much.
Exactly. Same thing with Nick on the Self-Publishing Answers podcast with me, who's doing well with it. Those are kind of his style of books as well.
Yeah.
Like National Treasure style, which I think are definitely going to, I'm not going to say they're easier to market, because I know he has done a lot of work to get it there, but I think that they're going to work a lot better for that platform than like middle grade or maybe even young adult books would.
Yeah. Just to give those guys a plug as well, I've just signed up to offer.email.
Sweet.
It's working really well. So if anyone out there does want to get a mailing list set up, that's, go to author.email and sign up. It's easy as that, really.
Yeah, I think it's free up to 1,000 or 2,000 or something like that followers.
Yeah,
which,
I've got nothing
to worry
about.
If you have like 2,000 followers, yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you have like 2,000 followers, then who cares if you're paying a little bit of money? But it's for people like me and you who have less than that, who are not wanting to pay MailChimp. And for MailChimp, you can do it like per email, and it's pretty cheap.
Yeah.
Like, I think $9 buys you like 300 emails.
We were on MailChimp before, but we didn't. I've moved over to off.email because they've got the autoresponder on there
exactly.
as well. And that seems really key.
Yeah, and that's the free
really
part.
Key. Yeah, yeah.
And the only paid part on MailChimp that I'm referring to, is that autoresponder, the automated emails for people who don't know what autoresponder means.
Yeah.
And those are key, you know, like setting up a whole bunch of those that go out like every few days or week or two or whatever.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like it's too bad, 300 emails, but I have a pretty small list, and I think my $9 only lasted me like a month or month and a half.
Yeah.
So. You got to think about it. You can save $120 a year or so going to author email. Author.email.
So just got a couple more questions, and then we'll let you get back to work. So what's your favorite story, be it game, book, film, or comic?
Well, of course, Princess Bride and Braveheart.
Me and Kat watched Princess Bride for the first time about 2 weeks ago. We'd never watched it.
Did you like it as an adult?
It was great.
A lot of people who watch it as adult don't like it as much, and so it's always interesting to hear if somebody who watched it as adult likes it or not.
Well, I just think maybe it was a marketing thing, because looking at, like, I thought it was gonna be like a romancy sort of child sort of thing. But I mean, it is that, but it's also incredibly funny. And
yeah,
quirky.
It's incredibly amazing in every single possible way.
Yeah,
I'm one of those guys who watched it like 1,000 times by now, I'm sure. And that's probably not an exaggeration.
Yeah.
Same thing with, well, Braveheart might be more like 100. But okay. Those two are definitely at the top of my list. And then I love, you know, all the great books. Like I said, Brandon Sanderson, awesome books. George Martin, Game of Thrones, you know, younger books as well. I kind of liked the Percy Jackson books, but then the movies weren't so amazing. So that kind of made it not as fun for me, which yeah. sucks. But yeah, games. I've loved the Uncharted series. And oh, the Tomb Raider, 2013 Tomb Raider. I think that's my favorite game of all time because it hit all the mechanics right. Like I never got bored. I never get frustrated. It was fun. The story was like moving throughout. I never felt like I was just playing a game without story. It always kind of all worked together as one.
Yeah.
So I think that's, I can't rate. I haven't played the new Rise of the Tomb Raider that just came out, but I'm really excited for that.
Cool. And comic book, do you read many comic books?
Unfortunately, no. I need to more. I read the Walking Dead ones because, of course, we're doing Walking Dead, you know? So I've read all those. Those were a lot of fun.
Oh, that's a good point.
They get pretty disturbing at points. But...
the canon that the games follow, they follow the comic book, right? Not the TV show.
Correct.
Okay, yeah.
They had some characters who were in both, you know, early on. Like Walking Dead season one had what's his name? I'm blanking right now, but the Asian kid. The Asian guy.
Yeah. I've never actually watched a TV show. I watched the first episode or something, but I was always a big fan of the comic books, so I sort of stuck with that.
Yeah.
But you are right, it's disturbing. It's horrible. And the Asian... I don't know how far you got with it, but the bit with the Asian guy gets... I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but it was like heartbreaking when...
Those are always heartbreaking.
Cool. All right, man. So the last question then. Where can we keep up with you and your work?
Yeah, so I just switched over to... a new author site. It's justinsloanauthor.com. My old one was justinmsloan.com, in case people are wondering about that. It now directs over to justinsloanauthor.com.
Cool.
And so that's where I'm putting all my... It's more focused on my fiction work. You can still find my old site, which has like everything about me, at justinmsloan.wordpress.com. I'm kind of getting away from that just because I want to be more fiction-focused as far as the website.
Yeah.
And but then you have, you know, creativewritingcareer.com and militarywriteringcreativecareers.com for the two podcasts, and those both have like my books and sign up, and then I kind of use them all as blogs also. So if I'm writing like a nonfiction blog or a blog more about like the business of writing, I'll put that usually on creativewritingcareer.com. If I'm something about like my own fiction, or like if I'm publishing a piece of one of my books or something like that on the web for people to look at, then I'll do that on my author website. So for people to like find everything about me, it's kind of confusing because I'm separating myself a bit.
Yeah. That's okay. You know. So the nonfiction stuff is more creative writing career.
And then the fiction stuff is more justinsloanauthor.com. And then, you know, Twitter at Justin M. Sloan.
Yeah.
And Facebook, I think I have like facebook.com/justinsloanauthor, something like that.
Yeah. So, and LinkedIn as well. I found.
LinkedIn. I'm happy to connect with people. If people want to email me, I use sloanartist@gmail.com.
That's pretty much what I did. I think I messaged you on like every... I gave you the surround sound effect. I messaged you on LinkedIn, Facebook.
Email. That's good, because some people don't check LinkedIn messages, which is frustrating for me because I love LinkedIn. It's, you know, it's how I get every job I've gotten recently, it feels like.
Yeah, since listening to your podcast, I've finally updated my profile.
Yeah, some people don't, you know, like we interviewed Will White, and he's the author of fiction, and that's all he is. Like, he doesn't play around with screenwriting or video games or anything like that. When I say all he is, it's awesome, of course. It's but so for him, he feels like there's no point to have LinkedIn because he just hasn't found any use for it. For me, since I'm doing the video game thing and the screenwriting thing, I found it very useful. And even if I was only doing fiction, I think it'd be great to, why not have another site that lists all your books up there for people to find, right?
Yeah. So LinkedIn, to be honest, I still can't work it out. Maybe
why?
That's a creative... I don't know. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, I mean,
the main thing I would do on there is you put like a summary that just says who you are, which is like kind of the main thing you'd have on your bio or on your website or something.
Yeah.
You know, the one paragraph version of what you want people to know about you.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's kind of like, you don't even have to put like I just put author, screenwriter, video game writer, and then put in my bullets for each of those, you know?
But then how do you sort of direct people to that? Or do you sort of apply for jobs and then say...
Oh, as far as that side of it? So what I do there is if I see a job I like,
yeah,
the first thing I do is I go on there and type in the name of that company and recruiter, and then all the recruiters pop up, and I go and I click on all of their pictures, because that'll send them a little message that this guy clicked on your profile picture.
Okay.
And maybe I'll try to connect with him if I feel like there's a reason to, like we have some kind of connection in common or something. And then I apply for the job, and that way, you know, it's kind of like you said, hitting them on all angles.
Yeah.
It's like, they're going to look at my profile or they might not, give a crap, but they might look at my profile because I clicked on theirs. And then also see my name when it comes through on their application process. Or if they connect with me, or I can send them an email or something, I might say, hey, just wanted to hit you up, say that I, you know, in a more formal way, say that I applied for your job and I look forward to hearing from you. And so it's kind of like, you know, you're just making sure that they know you're there. Because a lot of times recruiters get so many applications for jobs that they might not get a chance to go through all of them, or they might only, you know, care about some of them because they know somebody who recommended them or something. But this way they might look and go, oh, wow, that guy worked at Telltale. That guy wrote on Game of Thrones. Oh, that guy was in the Marines. You know, all these things that just could be the trigger that they need because of something in their life that they like about that. Like their dad was in the Marines, or the most hardworking person they have at their company was in the Marines, or whatever.
Yeah.
You know? So I use it mostly as that, in that way. But also connecting with just people that I think are awesome. Why not?
Yeah. Why not?
Some people don't, some people do, you know, that's how I met Stefan, who's on my podcast. I connected with him on LinkedIn, and just over a course of a year or so, sent him a few little messages. It was like, hey, I'm thinking about applying for the UCLA program. I saw you did that. What are your thoughts? Stuff like that. You know, it's just little, I wouldn't go on there and pester people. I wouldn't send him like a daily email. I've had different people email me in different ways. Like one person was just emailed me and said, hey, here's my book. I think it's awesome. Here's why. Will you read it? No, I'm sorry, but I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
Like maybe if it really hit my fancy somehow I would, but there's just so many books to read that that's not the best way.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people give the great advice of you just connect, and if people are curious, they'll check you out. You know, so maybe if you connect and say, oh, I saw you go to UCLA, I'm thinking about that too, what's your advice? Oh, I got in, here's my professor, blah, blah, blah. Oh, by the way, I wrote a book, it's pretty cool, what are your thoughts about what I should do with the book? And then maybe that person's going to be like, oh, what's that book? I'm curious. And they'll Google it or look it up on Amazon or whatever. And then they might read it because it looks awesome or something about it. But like just random emails to everybody saying, hey, look at my book.
It sounds to me like how like networking probably should be done in person. Like if you go to a networking event and someone just throws their card at you from the other side of the room and like puts it in your pocket, you don't really want to know. But if you build a relationship, it seems to work.
That said, at certain points in my life, I've had people email me and say, oh, I saw you left a review on this book. My book's very much like that. Would you be interested in looking at it if I send you a free copy or something like that? And I've done it. Right now, I'm too busy to be able to do that. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it, but I would say that if you do it, approach it with like, you know, some kind of in, like, I did that same thing on Goodreads. Some people left great reviews for Spirit Animals, the book. And so I emailed a few of them because you can connect through Goodreads that way. You can't on Amazon, unfortunately. And I just said, hey, I saw you left a 5-star review on Spirit Animals. My Back by Sunrise book has some similar themes and, you know, people turning into animals and whatnot, which is a little bit different, but similar. Would you be interested in reading it if I sent you a review copy? And people, you know, a few people are like, yeah. And then they read a few of my other books and like those too. And so it works, but I just, you know, approach it with caution and don't be annoying.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds good. All right, man. I won't keep you for any longer. How far have you got to go to get back to the office?
Oh, I'm right outside. I just went into my car. So if the sound is bad, I apologize.
But no, it's good.
Cool. Yeah. So I'm just right outside. Side looking, like I said, out at the lake, enjoying it.
Is anyone inside the office looking out at you sat on your own in the car?
No, but the security guy walked around and he was probably like, what's this guy doing?
Yeah. Have you I've started doing podcasting and like walking at the same time, sometimes you get odd looks from people.
But well, wouldn't that be really noisy in the wind and everything like that?
Yeah, I only do it when I haven't got time to sort of do it sort of every day or whatever. But I just pretend I'm on the phone.
Yeah. Okay. We even have a back office that I've tried to podcast out of, but the noise, the audio quality is just too echoey.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work. So I've had to start doing it in the house now when I do it usually. Yeah. Or the car. The car's good because it's kind of like a cushiony material all over the place. So it's not so horrible.
Yeah.
But yeah, cool. Anyway. Yeah, well, definitely I appreciate having me on. It's been cool. I hope everybody comes and checks out our podcast, especially the military one, because the Creative Writing Career one is doing well on its own. But the military one has been a little bit more of a struggle.
Yeah.
It's more of a slow burn, I think. You know, people, it's more niche, so people have to kind of discover it versus the other one. You know, we have a Pixar guy and a Telltale and this author who's done a lot of like 20 something books. And so people are just discovering it on their own through keywords or what have you. I'm not sure. How'd you find about it, by the way, before we hang up?
Oh, well, you tell me about it because I was listening to, so I listened to the self-publishing podcast episode that you were on. And sweet. then from there, I think I started following you on Twitter. And then from there, I found a self-publishing answers. Actually, I didn't know you were going to be on self-publishing answers. You popped up. And then from there, I messaged you. And then you said, check out Creative Writing Career. And then sort of found my way.
I weaseled my way onto self-publishing answers by Kevin, who also does Wordslinger, got me on there. And then I listened to that other one they were doing. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. And then I was like, well, I want to start a podcast related to this stuff. But why would I start one and be a competitor when I could just jump on somebody else's who already has an audience? And so that worked out awesome because those guys are great and they kind of welcomed me in.
Yeah.
And we were going to play it like we were, like I was a special guest, you know, and they just keep doing it, special guest every week until people caught on.
Yeah.
But that didn't last. Okay. It would have been fun. Anyways, yes. Cool. So watch out, guys. I'm going to leech onto all your podcasts pretty soon.
Yeah. Join us next week where Justin will be back on.
Every week, every lunch. Yeah. I'll just come out here every lunch break and,
Cool.
Anyways, I appreciate it. It's been awesome. Yeah. Best of luck on the podcast. I'll be sure to check it out.
Cool.
Sure.
So it's this one's going to go up on Monday. I'll drop
That's
you
a quick turnaround.
I'll drop you a message to let you know when it's up and everything as well.
Great. Thank you, listener.
All right, man. Take care.
Take care. Thanks.
Bye bye.
If you were thinking that Justin's day job sounds incredible, you were correct. It does sound incredible. Sounds amazing. So definitely go check out his website, go listen to his podcasts and get all up in that. For now, I've got some work to do on my novel. This coming Friday, the show, I'm going to go over what my publishing plan is for 2016 for myself and our story studio, Hawk and Cleaver. It's going to be a pretty epic year, I believe. So I can't wait to tell you what we're planning to do. So maybe in a year's time we can look back and see what we what succeeded and what failed and that sort of thing. Get in touch with me. Let me know what you're up to, what you're making. Email address is lukeofcondor@me.com. That's Condor with a K. Or tweet me. That's @lukeofcondor. Cool. All right, guys. I'll speak to you soon. Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.